Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. This pause, that pause should have been the word but if I do it again, Naz will yell at me like she did the last two takes. How are you? Welcome. I'm glad you're here.
I wasn't yelling at you.
But it's like so hard not to. But
I wasn't yelling at
Well, the tape says otherwise.
I was just like, be a bit tidier with the opening.
No,
otherwise,
that's literally, you literally said, don't say
But you say it right after like the third word, so it sounds really sloppy.
Yeah, but every time you get into something, you start with the words, you say, okay, and then you say what you're going to say.
But that's less sloppy. Anyway,
you say, okay, cool.
That's less sloppy. So welcome to the Gender Not, I am Naz.
I'm Dan. I'm so glad you're here.
So we are on hiatus, but we're gonna replay a really good episode we had a couple of months ago, and it was on Imperfect Allies. So how to try and be an ally when you know you might not have behaved in the best way towards women. So we thought we'd replay it because last week we talked about apologies, and we're gonna talk about apologies again. Last episode we talked about apologies, and we're gonna talk about apologies again soon. We've got a journalist joining us who I'm really excited that we're going to have on. So we thought that, like, yeah, that chat about imperfect allies is a good one to revisit at this moment.
Absolutely. Especially considering a new Netflix special.
Which one?
Aziz.
Oh, but I thought that's gone and done.
Well, I mean, it's still new, right? It's only a few weeks old.
Did you watch it?
No, of course not.
Why not?
Because I never found him funny in the first place. And
yeah,
you can check the records on that internet. I'm not saying that just because he's a jerk.
I've always found him a bit, I don't know, just kind of immature humor. But anyway, let's do a little bit of housekeeping.
Housekeeping.
It's your turn.
Yeah, I love housekeeping. If you couldn't see it, but you guys, I got really excited. There was a whole physical gesture. Write to us, huh? We love writing. Send us anything you wanted to talk to, questions on, concerns with, issues on, when we do another show about apologies. We'd love that. The email address is thegendernot@gmail.com. You can also write us a review if you like writing so much. Anywhere you can put reviews. iTunes is a good spot.
This sounds like some sort of like reading and writing sort of like promo.
Say you want to write us an email. You like writing so much. Write some other stuff for us. I think that's
also
a good pitch.
Also, share the show if you're into it. Share it with two people.
Yeah, and then make them.
You might share it with one.
Yeah, yeah. Because chances are most of your friends suck. So share it with a few, and hopefully one of them will follow through, and you'll know who your soulmate is.
That is such a random thing to say. Why would you say such a thing?
Because anytime you tell anyone to do anything, it's a real roll of the dice whether or not they're going to do it.
But what's it got to do with their friend sucking or not?
Well, that's called
that's
facetiousness.
So random. Was it, if you don't like the show, then especially write to us there. Dan, I have a quick question. You didn't know that I was going to raise this, but I've got a quick question for you.
Uh-oh. Based on your facial expression, it doesn't look like a question I want to answer publicly.
Did you listen to my documentary about emotional labor?
Oh, heavens no. I've
Why
been
not?
So busy.
Two of our listeners actually listened to it, and they actually specifically emailed talking about it. One of these people lives in Singapore, so he was able to access it.
Okay.
It was in the show notes to the last episode. That's why these two people talked about it in emails they sent to us.
Oh, you know I don't read the show notes.
Well, it was
there. I do
the
show.
Why
would I read the notes?
I told you last episode I was annoyed at you for not having listened to it. And then we had a bit of a beef. And now you've like still not listened to it. And I on purpose didn't tell you I was going to raise this because I...
Because because you wanted to paint me into a corner. instead of offering a solution and going, hey, by the way...
I
have
already told
chance,
you. Am I meant
have
to
you had a
do
chance
all the
to
work?
Listen to this?
Am I meant to do
doing,
all of the work?
No. Well, if you're not going to do any work, you don't get to yell at me.
What do you mean if I'm not going to do any work?
I mean, if you're not going to be a part of the solution, you don't get to.
I get the link was in the show notes.
I don't read the show notes.
Yeah, but what am I meant to, like, sit you down and be like, Dan, sit down while I play this to you?
No, you could send me an email and go, hey, by the way, here's that thing we talked about.
Well, you could Google it as well.
That's ridiculous. This is a ridiculous.
Anyway. You look super pissed off at me.
I'm just sleepy, and everybody's yelling at me this morning.
Okay, so let's get on to today's show. So we did an episode, Imperfect Allies. We talked to Omar Aziz. He joined us. He co-hosts a podcast called The Samavara Network, which is about issues related to being African-American. So Omar joined us, and we had a really good chat, and I was really grateful to him because he opened up about some really personal stuff. So he opened up about... having been told by an ex-girlfriend that he had been abusive towards her and what impact that had on him, and especially given that he's someone who's very involved in social justice. So, you know, he's really in that space, but yet he's been told that his behavior is abusive. So, you know, what that did in terms of him being an ally, his behavior, who he thinks he is and stuff. So we had a chat with him. In that episode, we played... some of an interview I did with Jackson Katz about a year and a half ago. We're not going to repeat it here, but I'm just going to raise it because we briefly mentioned Jackson Katz. So I'd asked him at one point about what women can do to help men who want to be allies to women. And Jackson Katz said, you know, women can not expect the men in their lives to be perfect, but expect them to get involved. You know, like we're all going to be, you know, discriminatory or have imperfections to us. But he also said that he thinks that a lot of men don't get involved in feminist issues because they feel like hypocrites, because they feel they might have treated women or girls badly. So they're like, who am I to get involved? So that's what we talk about when we raise Jackson Katz. Okay, cool. Here's our chat with Omar Aziz.
I've always tried to pride myself on being about social justice and diversity and being supportive of women and considering myself a feminist and all those things. But one of the most impactful moments for me and one of the most eye-opening was, you know, I was trying to get back with the next girlfriend and was telling her that I changed and I've done all these, you know, and I'm a new person. But, you know, when she came back and told me was when we were together that some of my behaviors, like she said, what basically came off as abusive, being jealous, being kind of possessive and questioning things and the way I spoke with her, that was a really huge shock for me and was really eye-opening because I had never thought that the word abuse could be applied to me because I was always someone that was out front trying to, you know, talk about women's rights or whatever it may be, like thought of myself that like I can never do something like that. And that was when I realized like how inherently ingrained so much of that behavior is and realizing that it was more about my own insecurities. But that was just a really eye-opening moment for me. And it made me question, like every time I hear about the incidents or you know, hearing about men behaving in really, you know, bad ways, like, were they like me where they didn't even realize it was happening? And it makes me a little bit more hesitant now to be as outspoken as I once was or be as vocal as I once was about, you know, about women, about like the abuse that the women face, because I'm like, I was one of those people too.
So she said all these things that you'd done and it was abusive. Is it that you didn't realize you'd done that stuff or that you didn't realize that stuff was abusive?
I grew up with a lot of, like, I saw it with my own parents, right? Like, I saw so much of, you know, my culture is like on women and how they behave and how they act and how so much of like your honor is built around that. And for me, it was just so normal. Like, for me to ask, like, who are you going out with? Like, are there other guys there? Like, why are you hanging out with those guys? Why are you talking to those guys? That seemed like such a normal question. Like, it seemed like it was okay. I thought I was protecting her. I thought I would say it's not because of what I think you're gonna do when you go out to the club or whatever. It's because I think other guys are gonna like do messed up things to you. And I didn't see it. I think in the moments I did, but I never heard the word abuse attached to it. And once that came and once I heard that, that really changed things for me. Because she called me out on it, but once that word was attached to it, I don't know. It just something was just triggered for me that this was way more serious than I had ever imagined.
And then what did you do? Like, did you feel you could talk to anyone about it?
I tried to talk to some people about it, you know, and it's funny because like the behaviors I was exhibiting were a lot of very like straight macho kind of male behaviors, and I actually don't have a lot of straight macho male friends. So it was kind of hard to find somebody who could actually get where I was coming from. I've heard a lot in the podcast about, like, you know, men just not having a lot of friends that they can go out and talk to. It was really hard to have those conversations. And then to put that on women and talk about my own shitty behaviors, like, you feel guilty about doing that. You're like, because they maybe have experienced some of their own stuff. So
since you were talking to non-straight macho men, was anyone like, just stop doing that?
Yeah, definitely. I think sometimes people didn't realize how deeply ingrained it was. And it's just like, you just have to stop. You just have to get over it, you know? And it's like,
oh, yeah.
I don't
just
know how
get
to do
over
that.
It. Yeah.
You were talking to straight guys about it, though, no? That they were like non-macho dudes. No.
Most of the people that I talked to were women or gay men.
Okay. Oddly enough, the easiest people to talk to about emotions, but the people who simply wouldn't understand where you were coming from.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was the struggle, was like, they didn't necessarily see how ingrained it was within me. I've been really thankful to have those friends, but it's just been really hard to always have folks that can relate to some of those issues.
So then I'm wondering, how did that make you feel in terms of, because you said at the start that you were always someone who was into social justice and stuff. So how did it make you feel about Omar, who is into these issues?
It made me really reflect on my past, on all my behaviors. And it really, the fact that she didn't take me back, the fact that she chose not to get back together with me because of my behavior, was honestly the best thing that could have happened. If she had taken me back, I know that my behaviors wouldn't have changed. I would have seen it as like, it's okay. And that was the most important lesson for me, was that like, it's not okay, and you're going to have to face some consequences. And I'm actually really grateful that that happened.
Yeah, that's kind of great. Because when I was listening to what Jackson Katz said at the end, it was one of those situations where I kind of agree and disagree with him. And I feel like this is one of those conversations where we can't really be theoretical about it, right? You know, okay, no one is perfect. And the previous episode about how to be an ally, I was saying especially that guys are not perfect. They've been raised in this sort of society, so they need to get stuck in. But I don't know what you guys think. I do think it really depends on degree. Like, there's a difference between, I don't know, someone did a few things that weren't great versus someone was like really horrendous. Like, someone assaulted women or was massively abusive towards women, made them feel threatened, made them feel scared. Do you know what I mean? Guys who are doing really extreme things, I'm like, you have bigger fish to fry right now than being an ally. Like, you need to go away and like work on that a little bit. There's like more urgent stuff going on.
Yeah, that was something that I kind of wanted to talk about. You know, you and I had been talking about that offline. And what Omar was just saying kind of made me think of that. Like, you know, when you said that it made you want to be less outspoken, I think once we've done some work around this stuff, and obviously, like you were just saying, Naz, some people have a lot more work to do than others before they can get back in the mix. But I think once we've done some work around this, like, that's when we can be the most helpful. You were saying that you didn't have a lot of friends that you could talk to about this stuff, man. Well, now you can be that friend for people. Those of us who have made some progress have the most to share. It's like when you're in school and they bring in that guy who's done every drug on earth and he's the one teaching you about drugs. And it's like, okay, cool. I want to listen to this guy. He's not my nerdy science teacher who's never done a drug in his life. Mr. Brandt, that's a real guy. But
hey.
But like he's got real world experience. He's been to hell and back with this thing, and he knows what he's talking about, and he has real value to offer, and he's done the work around it. And so when we can go through a situation like you're talking about and not be taken back and have to go like, oh, damn, there's real world consequences to the actions that I've had. And if I don't make changes, if I don't do some work and figure out like what about me is causing this and how do I become a better person around it, like, I'm not going to have the things I want. I'm never going to have a fulfilling relationship with that type of person, the type of person who doesn't put up with that bullshit, like the kind of woman that I want in my life.
But then that makes me wonder though, Omar, because I think that's great you went off and reflected and stuff. Was there the temptation that, like, because I feel like a lot of people in that position might go the other way. They might get really defensive. They might be like, you know, screw this. Like, I haven't done anything wrong. She's the one with the problem. I'm wondering kind of what made you go off and reflect. And I guess for each person, it's different, right? And it also depends on where they are at in terms of their own emotional development. But was there that temptation to be like, I haven't done anything wrong, she's being ridiculous? What you did is quite hard, like having to go away and reflect on the fact that she doesn't want to take you back.
For as long as we were dating, it was pointed out to me. And I kept saying like, no, it's not that big of a deal. Like, it's not that serious. There's definitely that temptation to say, this is okay. Or, and sometimes I would justify it as like, oh, well, I'm just trying to protect her. Like, if I prevent her from getting into these situations, then I'm actually doing her a favor. And like, you know, like, there are different ways that you just kind of like create this idea in your head of that it's okay. I think luckily, because of my background, because I was more comfortable in conversations around social justice and, you know, those kind of things, that I knew that it's important to listen to other people. And when they tell you something, to really hear them out and try to act differently. So that was something that was always ingrained in me. So I think that I really had to do that again once she kind of called me. And I think that word abuse was a really, that's the thing that I struggle with a lot, is because when we hear the word abuse, like, are we talking about Harvey Weinstein? Are we talking about Aziz Ansari? Like, there's differences. And that's something that I've just been struggling with a lot in terms of, like you were saying, like, we have to get into like kind of the details of it. But I don't know, like, because when I hear that word, that word is attached to both of those people, and it was attached to me. But am I the same as a Harvey Weinstein or all these other people? Like, I don't think so, but we don't have the language around it, it feels like.
Are you still unclear as to what she meant, though? Because when I think of abuse, I think that someone has been treated cruelly, they've been treated unfairly, they've been made to feel demeaned, degraded, they felt scared. It's kind of like to do with a lack of safety, really, and a lack of respect, but that's kind of how I see it. But I'm wondering, are you still clear on what she meant, or are you still wondering, what does this word of abuse mean? Because like you say, it's, yeah, abuse can be everything from rape to like belittling someone and like, you know, wearing down their self-esteem, which is also really significant, which is why kind of like emotional and psychological abuse is like really difficult to deal with, because people often don't see it.
I don't know, I think I do see it as a form of abuse, because that's what was kind of named. Like, there's still a part of me though that doesn't feel comfortable saying that. That feels really, I just feel uncomfortable saying that word, like even saying it out loud, because I know when people think of that word, they're thinking of like the worst things. So I try to remember that, like, that can be applied to me, but at the same time, it's hard, because I want to say like, no, I'm not this monster, I'm not this kind of evil person.
Yeah, I get that, man, because it's hard to say like, I was abusive and then not finish the sentence.
Mm-hmm.
By being controlling and
but I'm not like that anymore, sort
yeah
of thing.
Yeah, not even saying I'm not like that anymore, but by qualifying the level of abuse and saying like, I was abusive in a way where I was hyper judgmental and critical of the people that she hung out with, but I didn't like yell at her, and I didn't call her names, and I didn't hit her, and I didn't do anything. Like, because when you say I was abusive, the first thing that people think of is I was violent.
Yeah.
You know
yeah
what I mean? Or I was psychologically cruel. And this is a level of psychological damage, but it's not on par with those things. And we want to explain that, but then we just look like we're hiding even more.
So I'm wondering, given that you're both guys, where do men go when they know they've done something abusive towards women? I partly ask that because after Me Too broke, there was this spate of like men online talking about times they'd been abusive. And I know that me and a lot of women I know, we were really pissed off by that. We were like, go away, we don't want to hear it. And there was a podcast episode we did about it. It was me and another woman, a friend of mine. We were talking about this, and guys got really offended, and women really resonated with that. Like, so many women came up to me and were like, you know, I love that show, I passed it on to like my brother, or I made like my ex-boyfriend listen to it, or whatever. Do you know what I mean? And there was that sense of like, as a woman, and I sometimes have this as well, where like a guy, he wants to grow, he comes to talk to me about something, but it's also triggering for me as well, because it's kind of like, okay, I appreciate you want to grow, but I personally don't want to listen to this because I've been on the other end of it. So I'm just wondering, like, where do guys go with something like this?
Yeah, I mean, the last person you really want to tell about your past abusive behavior is somebody who's been victimized by that.
But you might not know, though, because like, a lot of women, and I think that this is what happened with Me Too, like so many women have had instances of sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, right? And, you know, we don't go around telling everyone about this all the time, right? So it's very likely that as a guy, you're going to tell a woman this. And, you know, the chances are pretty high she might have had something bad happen to, you know?
Right. And it, well, and the thing is, unless we know that another guy has been through it or done some work around it, I don't know that talking to them is going to do anything. They might just be like, ah, she's being a bitch, or whatever the fuck guys say. I agree with you that that whole thing that guys were doing with the, well, I've also been a predator, you know, on their Facebook and Instagram or whatever the fuck people were doing. I agree that that was obnoxious and unnecessary. And
that
really,
might just be social media as well, because I feel like a lot of behavior.
Yeah, it's that thing where like all these women were going on social media and talking about what had happened to them, and there were women in the news and on TV and all that stuff. And guys went, well, okay, well, I'd like to join in and tell you about what my stuff is. And it's like, well, okay, that's important, but not right now.
Right.
But without a platform for guys to share what they've had in their lives, other guys aren't going to know that it's okay for them to talk about and them to get over. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think that was the wrong time, but I do think that we need to have a space where we can be open about that stuff. And, you know, maybe this is just one more plug for men's groups.
We should do a franchise of like gender not men's groups.
We absolutely should.
Get you and Johnny Blackwell to like run them.
I feel like the social stigma is so high for coming out with that like, as I agree with Dan that it was bad timing, but if we can make it okay for men to come forward with that stuff, then I think then we can actually address it and deal with it. When you say abusive, like we said, you go to the worst possible thing imaginable. And so most men are going to be hesitant to come forward with even kind of the I don't want to say lighter, but just like the other forms of abuse that are there that aren't violent, that aren't...
They're more,
you know,
covert.
The,
less obvious.
Yeah. So I feel like if we can... Just having that out can do that. And I would say one of the craziest things in my life was actually coming forward with my past behaviors to my wife after she had come out about her own, you know, she is a survivor of sexual assault. And like, I felt it was important for me to like, let her know that I'm not perfect. Like I have been like abusive. I have done these things in the past. That's something that just kind of came to mind when you talked about like, you know, sharing these stories. Like I had to tell my wife and come forward with that. And that was one of the hardest things I've ever done.
This is interesting. So how did you tell her? And I'm wondering, like, when did you tell her? Because this could be a real learning opportunity for other people who are like in a position like this.
I think I learned a lot that by not always being completely honest and forthcoming, I end up causing more harm.
Yeah.
So she had basically a panic attack one night. I was just really like, what's going on? And in the work that I've done, I've actually had survivors of sexual assault come forward with me. Like I worked at a university where like people will report that to me. So I was kind of familiar with how this goes, but she was having a panic attack because she felt like she was holding it in.
Holding in this story from you.
Yeah. Holding in this like really traumatic and just very like impactful experience of her life that she was like, I want you to just know about me, about my past. If we're going to go into marriage, like we were engaged at the time, just dating, but like, I need you to know this about me. It was important to know. And for me, it was like, I also need you to know, I guess, and I only like a day later, like it was hard for me to sit and hear that and hold that and also not have her know that like, I've also been told that I've been abusive or that I've done some shitty behavior. I don't know. I don't know what was the like the main impetus for it, but I think it was just really hard for me to hold on to that and for her to see me as this like perfect guy when I'm not. She took it really well, and it was like a really important and healthy, I think, conversation and dialogue afterwards.
Were you nervous beforehand telling her?
Yeah, definitely. Like it was really, really challenging, really difficult. And it was something that I was very hesitant to share. It was something that I was always thinking about, but I also was like, I don't know when's the right time to say it. And like for her telling me that was like, I want to be completely honest with you. So I was like, I need to do the same for her and talk about my own past shitty behaviors as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like the closest person in my life, but you know, so it's like, how do I say that or come forward to other people or be able to talk about that stuff with people who I'm not going to be constantly in communication with? That's the thing that I struggle with.
I feel like part of being a good ally is saying that you're imperfect, but then I do think the degree of imperfectness is important. If you're doing really bad stuff, then like, dude, just focus on getting yourself together. And, you know, the whole thing of working on ourselves is the best thing we can do for other people. I feel like there's a lot to that.
Absolutely.
But I do want us to focus on, like, the degree of imperfection, though. Because I really do think that's important, though.
I completely agree. And to the degree of, you know, imperfect behavior, there should be an equal, if not greater, degree of work done around it.
Right.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, you can be an ally simply by removing yourself from the table for a while. You know what I mean? Like, that's a great way to be an ally. Like, taking an opponent off the field is some great sportsmanship.
Okay, we stopped recording and we're back because Omar wanted to tell us something.
Okay, so I have a question. And again, maybe I'm just like trying to justify my own past behaviors and like make myself feel better. And Dan, maybe you can speak to this. I think that if you're a straight heterosexual male who's like actively dating, having, you know, physical relationships with women, that you've probably engaged in some form of abusive behavior. And it's just a matter of whether or not it's been told to you.
Yeah.
We kind of focus so much on the extremes of the really violent transgressions and like the really crazy stories of Me Too and of Harvey Weinstein and those kind of things that like we're missing the 95%. When I heard the Aziz Ansari situation, I'm like, there are many, many men that can relate to that and can really, really probably have had an encounter like that. So that's just like something that I'm thinking a lot about in terms of how do we talk about this and address this, because men don't want to come forward because it's like, if I come forward with this or with abuse, I'm going to be labeled small 5% extreme when really it's, you know, the other part. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I think with the Aziz thing, not to get into it too much, I think the reason why people had such a visceral reaction was because it wasn't extreme. Because I think a lot of guys read that and thought, I've probably been like this. And I think a lot of women as well read that and thought that I've been on the receiving end of this. And I don't want to admit that it was abusive because I am a, you know, young, empowered woman. I don't take shit from men. And yet this has happened to me. Speaking on the female side, this sometimes happens with sort of women whereby, especially if you're a feminist or like you see yourself as an independent, strong woman, you don't want to admit that I was powerless in front of a man. Like that can be a real blow. A lot of women were very critical of the woman as well. Those stories are harder to hear than sort of like Harvey Weinstein, right? Because it's so familiar and we just don't want to look at it.
So much of like heterosexual relationships and behavior is abuse. Like it's just, or it can really get to that point.
I don't want to make out that women are perfect because we're not. And there's a lot of covertly abusive things women do as well. But I'm wondering, is this also maybe just related to like concepts of masculinity, though? Go hand in
hand. I think
a
lot of it is that, you know, the idea that we have to be in control of every situation. We have to protect our women. You know what I mean? We have to keep them safe. And what that turns into is not the protective, quote unquote, head of a household man. And it becomes like an abusive, controlling, dominant force.
So I think this is slightly changing, but I think often women don't honestly speak about these things because they don't want to hurt the guy's feelings. So they don't want to honestly say like, hey, this thing you did was unacceptable, or hey, can you not do that? Or if we're talking about allyship, you know, a guy, he's doing something, he thinks it's being an ally, and women might not say anything because then the worry is the guy's going to be like, well, I'm not going to bother anymore. Or like, you know, I was only trying to help, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe I just won't get involved anymore. So it's kind of maybe on both sides, like women to speak and not worry about hurting the guy's feelings, and for guys to realize that they need to take feedback on board.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's the only way that I even am aware that this is a thing, was a woman said, hey, please don't fucking do that. I can stand up for myself.
Sorry, I have one more question. If I want to be friends with guys, like straight men, oftentimes I have to engage in sexist behavior to like keep those friendships.
Sadly, I think that's true. And, you know, I make it a real strong point to just not maintain those friendships. Like if the only thing that I have in common with another guy is that like he talks about tits or whatever, like we don't really need to hang out. I'm not gaining anything from that friendship. And I have the same problem with sports. Guys will be like, oh, did you see the Seahawks game? And I'm like, no. And they go, oh, you missed it? And I go, no, I just didn't see it. Then slowly they stop wanting to hang out with me, and that's fine.
Oh, I do wonder if this is hard, though, because so a few weeks ago we had one of our listeners wrote in, Jack, who talked about something similar about, you know, seeing a therapist and getting in touch with his feelings. Like, guys don't want to hear it. Women don't want to hear it because it's emotional labor. I don't know. It's weird because it feels like a lot of these kind of growth activities that we ask men to do they just make them more isolated?
Don't we have a responsibility as men to also like work with those guys, right? Like that's my biggest issue is like I have distanced myself a lot from a lot of those guys. And now it's become where, like, I don't have a lot of heterosexual male friends. And mm-hmm. so, like, how impactful is my work now? If I don't have that circle around me and I've just kind of distanced myself, then I don't know if I'm really making much of an impact. And I am going to women most often. I am going to, like, my gay cousins or whatever. And it's like, then what am I really doing?
That's not where the problem is, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's how we get Trump.
Yeah.
That's how I end every episode now. Okay, that's the show. I don't know how to wrap up a replayed episode, but that was it. We did it. This is a new wrap-up on an old tape.
So we spoke to Omar Aziz about being an imperfect ally. I am Naz.
I'm Dan. Our co-producers are Jonathan Blackwell and Sam Baker. And this is The Gender Nut, and we're glad you're here, and we'll see you later.
Okay, bye.
Stop licking me. My cat is licking me. There's not a person here licking me.
You should include that in the tape.